The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The Incomparable, number 621, July 2022.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I am your host, Jason Snell, and on this episode, we're going to be talking about a TV series, not a video game, but a TV series that's like a video game and is based on a video game a little bit. It is Halo. Now, Halo, available on Paramount Plus in the United States. I don't know where else it's available.
It is also, as of this week, available on Paramount Plus in the UK.
Oh, that's information there from one of my three guests for this episode. It's James Thompson. Thank you for providing us valuable Halo-related information and also, obviously, for binging the entire series in this first week that it's available in your country.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, only the first three episodes went up. But, you know, we'll draw a veil over
screeners.
That.
We have screeners for yes. Podcasters. They get them in advance. That's how that works.
I was going to say, I'm designed to look familiar, my voice and accent to be pleasant.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Dan Morin also joins us. Hello.
Hello, Jason.
Oh.
No, sorry. Had to be done.
Yeah, you did it. You did it. And Moises Chion also joins us. Hi, Moises.
You said that to me once about being a machine.
Can we just all agree that in general, making narrative media out of video games is a bad idea?
The success rate has been low. There's basically the original Super Mario Brothers movie, and that's it, right?
there's that Doom movie. Boy, that movie was a movie.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I went into this with extremely low expectations.
Same.
Yeah, me too.
It actually was surprisingly good.
They've been trying to make this for years. There's a movie version, right? Neil Blomkamp, right, was was attached.
Yeah, and it was Peter Jackson producing and Alex Garland writing.
Right,
it.
And so Kyle Killen ended up with it, who is a showrunner that's done a bunch of shows, including Awake, which was a great little short-lived TV show. So that was like, that's what got me interested in this. Like, I've played some Halo games in the past, not like, you know, compulsively. I haven't played a ton of them, but I played Halo 3 a bunch, and I played the most recent one. So I'm not like a huge Halo fan, but like, I'm familiar with it. And I was like, is that going to be a good show? Is that going to be interesting? And then I saw Kyle Killen was attached. I was like, all right, I'm interested. I mean, he seems like a good writer and a smart guy. And I was like, I'm kind of curious to see what he can do with it. So that was what got me in the door.
And I will just say, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen the show, we wouldn't probably do an episode about this if we all thought it was dumb and you shouldn't watch it. So we'll talk about it a little bit without a lot of details to see if we can whet your appetite a little bit. But I agree. I think it's worth watching. I was pleasantly surprised by it, especially since, as I just said, adapting video games is not really good. In fact, I might go so far as to say that the times when this felt the most like a video game, I felt like they shouldn't have gone that far. And that they were like, I love that they announced, when they announced the show, one of the things they announced, and you know they had to do it because of franchise maintenance and angry fanboys on the internet and whatever, was be like, oh, this is in a different timeline from the official timeline. It was like one of these canonical announcements of like essentially saying we're going to tell our own story and it's going to be Halo like, but it's not going to be exactly like, and that's okay. And I'm glad that they did that because one, I've only played a handful of Halo games, and two, I don't care. I just want the show to be good. And if they can make the show better by violating some of the Halo continuity, that's literally just fine with me. I do not care. And I feel like throughout the 9 episodes, ouch, that hurt. I was like, is there one more? No, that's it. The moments where I felt the franchise creep in were not my favorite moments of the show, because I felt like they were feeling like under pressure to give us a Master Chief POV with a heads up display and all the little sound effects. And a little of that to me went a long way. There were moments where I was like, oh, they look what they did from the video game. I remember that. But mostly I was happy for it to try to be this weird military science fiction show.
I want to seize on the point you made about, you know, maybe adapting video games is a mistake. I think the lessons learned from the massive mistakes preceding this, inclusive of the Doom movie that I mentioned, in particular, that one comes to mind because, similar to Halo, you have a first person perspective hero without much of a discernible personality, and crafting a movie, a TV show around that narratively. Guess what? We have lots of evidence now that doesn't work terribly well. Whether it's Doom, whether it's Gamer, which is like Doom through a high concept pitch lens. What I like most about this is that, similar to you, I have played little Halo overall, so I don't have that. I want it to be just a direct adaptation of the games. A direct adaptation of the games would be hopelessly boring, and it would just be like watching somebody play a game on Twitch.
It's a playthrough on YouTube. You can just watch those.
Exactly.
The narrative's not particularly great either. Let's put it this way. Sorry to offend Halo fans.
Well, there are diversions. There are diversions that are taken, but not just the alternate timeline thing that they announced, but chronologically, this show begins before the events of the first game.
Yes.
There are things that exist that don't exist when the first game starts. This doesn't spoil the end of the season, but I feel like the people that spent this entire season complaining about everything as if, you know, they should have been put in charge of everything in the universe. I think what they backed into at the end of the season shows that they are going narratively into the same direction of where the series of games begins. They're just not handling it exactly the way that mega, mega, mega fans of the games, who really only care about it as a death matching delivery service, they don't really care that much about the story, let's be honest. In ways that they say, well, that's not the way to do it. And then the least helpful thing I have found in a writer's room environment is to have a person say, well, that doesn't work, but then they don't have a suggestion for how to fix something.
Right.
Like, we get that it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. But that's what the vast majority of the complaints about the show have been to me. And I mean, Steve Downes, who's been the voice of Master Chief in the games for 20 years, he has spoken at length about how thrilled he is that it fleshes out who this buckethead in a suit is that has very much just been a cipher for the majority of the time that he's been performing it.
Also Jen Taylor, who is Cortana in this and in the games. Yeah, I mean, the thing that surprised me was I was watching this show and I was really enjoying it week for week. And it's like, I would say it's genuinely one of my favorite shows of the year. And we've had a lot of great TV this year. But the disconnect between what I was seeing online about people really disliking this show and what the experience that I was getting out of it, I just didn't quite understand how there could be this big of a disconnect. Because, I mean, it's like I played most of us played Halo 1 20 odd years ago. Right. And I played Halo Infinite before watching this. And I've subsequently, while I was watching the show, went back and I played Halo 4 and 5. So, you know, I had reasonable knowledge of the game, storylines, characters, and all that sort of thing. So I consider myself a fan of the games, but, you know, I really like the show as well. I mean, I think if you come into this not knowing anything about the games, that's not going to hurt you at all. All you get if you've played the games is, you pick up on things like the sound effects and the, oh, his shield is depleted.
Right,
and
or that's that ship, or I know that
production design stuff.
Yeah, the warthog, right, yeah. And like there's certain stuff where you're like, it's the thing you ride in, right? Like it's literally it's a vehicle that I know.
Yeah, and I didn't quite have the kind of visceral reaction that Jason did, you know, every time it's like, hey, here's a little bit of fan service. To me, it was that so much of that was so little and parceled out. It was, oh, we're at the roller coaster section of this episode. And it was fine with me because there's one episode that is very, very action heavy, but it also, for me, and granted, maybe I didn't catch some of the stuff. For me, it didn't feel like it was an episode full of fan service. It was just very action heavy and very roller coastery. But the element most directly related to the games, as James mentioned, is Jen Taylor as Cortana, which is my favorite part of the show. And I have a lot of favorite parts of the show. And like James, this is one of my delightful surprise favorite shows that I've seen this year thus far. Not just because it slightly confirms a hypothesis of mine that I've put out there on Agents of Smooch that, you know, if you're adapting something, maybe it's always better as a TV show than a movie. Maybe not everything has to be a movie. And giving us time to actually build relationships with not just Master Chief, but this very large supporting cast gives us people to care about who aren't just Doom Guy in the middle of it.
Right. And I want to say that one of the other things I thought was really good about splitting this off very distinctly from the timeline that is in present in the games is it allowed them to tell a story that is more subversive in some ways than in the games. Certainly more conflict and certainly things that make you more question the moral grayness. This is territory that the games, to my knowledge, do not really traffic in at all. Mm-hmm. And I had some people asking when I watched the first couple episodes, like, oh, was it good? Should I watch it? And I was like, you know, I kind of get some light Expanse vibes from parts of it for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think that to me is all to the good. I mean, if you want to sort of flesh out your world that in, you know, again, 20 years ago when they put this out as a game, it's like you're a dude who runs around in armor and shoots aliens. Like we didn't need to spin it out much more than that.
Did you want Halo to address anti-colonialism? Guess what? You're going to get that from the opening.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things based on a sort of first person shooter game. There is surprisingly little action and there's quite a lot of talking in this.
Yeah. And a lot of sci-fi, too. They ratchet up the sort of science fiction-y
for
stuff
people
too.
who have not seen the show, I guess what we could explain that this is a show that, yes, it is about a guy in armor who goes around shooting aliens. It is that, sure. But there are a bunch of other characters. So we meet he is part of a team of these super soldiers, essentially, who are
Silver Team, which is a Silver Team as in a nod to the Silver timeline.
Right. And so these are very special genetically enhanced super soldiers, and they work for the humanity, and there is a human government. We come to learn that they are kind of the oppressive government, and that for in episode one that there are people who want to not be a part of their commonwealth and are basically rebels and are being put down, and there's a moment where they expect to be put down by Master Chief and his team, but the aliens get there first and slaughter most of the people. So you've got this scenario where, like, first off, the government is obviously in question because there are rebels, and the second thing we discover about them is that we unravel the history of how these soldiers came to be and who's in charge of the government, and it is a mess and ugly, and they are not the good guys, even though they're maybe better than the aliens.
You mentioned rebels, and one of the things that I find interesting about their setup here is that in ways that Star Wars has not quite sold me on how people could, you know, live under the Empire and kind of get it and go along, the military industrial government complex that they have established in this series is basically the Empire from Star Wars, who were like, no, you have to join us. It's not an option. Yeah. And we're here to protect you. And you get to Dan's point, that morally gray thing of, Well, the option is join with us or get slaughtered by aliens looking for artifacts.
Dan mentioned Expanse. I would throw in Firefly as a reference.
A little bit, yeah.
It's in the sense that there's the super clean empire and the kind of like mess of humanity who's either dealing with the empire or trying hard not to deal with the empire. And in a Star Wars way, but it struck me that Firefly was maybe similar in some vibes from that too.
I would say also, to use a bit of a reductive 80s analogy, the show is kind of RoboCop with a dash of Starship Troopers.
Oh yeah, that's good. That's really good.
Strong RoboCop vibes.
Yeah. Jason, unlike Firefly, people of Asian extraction exist, not just their
language. Not just their language. Yeah. Oh no, that was actually, that's one of the reasons I was thinking of Firefly, is I was like, oh, this is like what Firefly kind of was trying to be but didn't do.
Yeah.
Because we traveled to lots of weird places where Bokeem Woodbine lives in like on a meteor attached to an asteroid attached to a minefield. It's so weird. And that's the other thing I wanted to say about this, is it is not just a clean military show where everybody's in their clean little military boxes and then they get dropped down and they are on a planet and they fight. And that could have been what this is. But we see where people live. There's interpersonal drama. There's political drama. There's very, very personal drama in the sense of Master Chief John and finding out about his past and making connections with other people. There are these aliens who are up to something, but it's unclear entirely what, and they have a plan. They seem to have a better plan than the Cylons, who didn't really have a plan. They just said
The aliens, the Covenant, are not just one species.
Yeah,
they are.
It's a composite.
Multiple species in union.
Yeah, they're kind of like the Federation, except they're the bad guys in this. Or are they? Sort of. Yes, they are. But anyway, so all of that is going on, and there are fight scenes. It's still trying to be Halo, and I don't think that it's bad. I think that there are moments where it's too much just like trying to play a level of a video game. And in fact, there are two different action scenes. There's one action scene very late in the show where I feel like they just completely give in to putting you in the Master Chief's view and showing
it's
the HUD
scene time.
And I was waiting for the like press X to continue. Whereas there's earlier on, there's I think the high point in terms of action of the whole season, which is when they're trying to get the magic rock essentially out of a planet and they're attacked, and that has a lot of those video game elements in it. And at the end of the episode, I said to myself, that's the best video game level I've not played in a long time. But it was also cinematic in a way that some of the others aren't. And my closing point about sort of like talking about what is this show for people who haven't seen it is, I want to say the main character, the Master Chief, he is a cipher because he's you, as in the video game. Here, he is a character. He's John 117. He is played by Pablo Schreiber,
he's a very handsome guy.
That was definitely a surprise to me when he took the helmet off, because I didn't actually pick up on who was playing
him.
It's
Nicky Sabaka from The Wire.
Nicky Sabaka from The Wire, yeah.
It's the leprechaun from American Gods.
And it's the leprechaun from American Gods.
I don't think it's a spoiler at this point that they take the helmet off.
Yeah.
We'll get further into just to what extent that happens. But I thought, you know, more so than them casting Carl Urban as Judge Dredd, well, there's no way that he would take the helmet off and we would see his face, because that's part of the whole thing with Judge Dredd. But here it was, why would you cast Pablo Schreiber and not let us see Nicky's face from The Wire?
Which actually goes to another point of a show that this is kind of like in a very strange way, which is The Mandalorian.
Yes, I was just thinking that.
You can get away with that, but that was kind of I don't want to say a fluke, but like they really worked hard to get you to a point where like having him take the helmet off was a significant moment. Whereas in this show, that was going to be real tough to get through a whole bunch of episodes, especially with the stories they wanted to tell. And I still find it weird every time I see him without his helmet on in the armor. It's just a little bit of a disconnect, but like, it's fine. I don't mind it. It's just a weird like,
It's weirder when he's running around in his underwear, basically. His
that's more normal looking to me, frankly.
And it, you know, it's like, what do you mean? I got to look at Darth Vader as an 8-year-old in Phantom Menace. It's a little weird, but it makes sense.
And there's a lone wolf and cub thing going on there, right? Because there's the girl from the colony, and he kind of brings her back, and then they want to experiment on her and kill her, and he refuses. And sorry, spoilers for the first. It's like the first episode, but it is what I wanted to say about Master Chief is what I realized is by episode 9. Here's what I thought about Master Chief is I knew who he was as a character, that he's not a cipher, that I know him. I like him. I'm kind of rooting for him. And even when he's doing things in episode 9, I would say to myself, oh, yeah, he would do that, wouldn't he? And what that means right, is the greatest accomplishment, I think, of this 9-episode first season of Halo is, at least for me, they took the cipher at the center of the show and put in the work to make him a character. And like, mm-hmm. I didn't think that would necessarily happen or work. And it totally works. There are things that are weird that happen. He has a interesting relationship with another character that I'm like, okay, I guess. But in the end, I felt like I knew who John was, and that when he was the Master Chief, it was also the human being inside the armor. And like, that's really powerful. And without that, I don't think the show works.
I think also we've got like three other Master Chiefs as well, who we get to see various different forms of that. And
if I can put the out other Kate Spartans, Kennedy, yeah. If I can put out Kate Kennedy as the MVP on this show,
yeah.
I would. Kai, I think Kai, she is the best character in this show. Incredible. By far.
She has the biggest journey, I think, of anyone.
And it's just
show.
She's just great. She is just a wonderful character. I really thought they were going to go in a very different direction with her after certain plot developments. I'm like, oh no, are we going to have some sort of weird like?
Yeah, we should probably fire up.
Yeah,
the spoiler
we should probably
horn
fire
up
the spoiler horn. But I will say that.
Yeah.
Before we do on that topic, one of the things that impressed me most, and I'm in complete agreement with Jason about what they have done to Master Chief as a character in fleshing him out, is that we have our central character, we have his team of squaddies, and it wasn't like Power Rangers. It's not.
Oh yeah.
It's not anything remotely like that dynamic. And he's gone from a cipher to a real proper audience surrogate where can you necessarily relate to everything about this guy? No, not necessarily, but he is relatable enough that you have an investment in this central character of this story and you have an interesting supporting cast, all of whom are interesting pivot characters in part of the season. We see a whole lot more of some of them than
yes,
we do.
Indeed, there's one episode where the Master Chief is just not in it. And can you believe that?
And yeah, it's a weird inversion of a particular episode of Book of Boba Fett. But the thing I'll say on this side of the spoiler horn is I love that I have a show that I can confidently go, hey, do you miss The Expanse? Do you miss the moral complexity of that kind of speculative fiction, sci-fi, future world thing? Well, guess what? You should be watching Halo. Yeah. Halo?
Believe it or not. Yeah, I think that's right. I wanted to mention, well, I'll go around before we fire off the spoiler horn for any last non-spoilery thoughts, but I wanted to mention Cortana again and just say one of my favorite things in the whole show, and it happens sort of late in the season, but is the use of Cortana. Okay, in the game, Cortana is there to be the narrator, essentially, and guide you as the character, as the Master Chief. And the idea is that it's an artificial intelligence inside your head. The way they play it, mostly, I think, mostly for laughs. They're like, it's like a really bad blind date, almost. Like, he doesn't want her there.
I'm gonna jump forward. Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't want her there, but she is there, and he can't get rid of her. She has her orders that she doesn't like, so she's just gonna kind of ignore them when she wants to, so because she's an independent entity, too, and they're this mismatched pair. It's like a buddy comedy going on inside their heads sometimes, and I love it.
What works so well about that too is if you play the games, you go in kind of having this experience where they sort of have this pre-established unspoken bond,
right?
Like they trust each other very implicitly in the games, and this show starts from a point of being like, no, here's how they get to that point, right? Like, right. here is mm-hmm. how you end up at a point where they, you
starts
know,
as
yes,
a betrayal,
he would trust.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, essentially. And he will eventually trust her with his life, but you got to understand how she earns that trust and vice versa.
Yep. Yeah. Anything else we should talk about before the spoiler horn?
Quan Ha, as a character, complete fabrication of the show, and I think a wonderful way in to Master Chief's story. And I like the way, if you watch the first episode and you go, I don't know if I'm down for this lone wolf and cub thing, that's not what it stays.
It's not like Mandalorian in that way.
It is not. And the show is so comfortable switching modes and switching positioning of characters. All of these characters are integral to this story. Master Chief happens to be at the center of it, but the dynamic doesn't play out necessarily the way that you assume, either from playing the games or based on tropes from the genre that you may have gotten used to. I was delighted by how often the show surprised me by not going the direction that it felt like they could have just gone and it would have been fine. They made all of their choices on the writing side of things for very intentional reasons.
I have some criticisms on that about how much she gets used or not used at a particular point in the storyline.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But one of the things I'd say is that the season feels kind of short, but it has been renewed for a second season. So it's not one of these things, given all the problems they had making it, and even problems making this show, because it was... being filmed when COVID hit, so they had like a 6-month break in the middle of filming, but even with all those problems, there is another season coming, so at least we're going to get some payoff for all this stuff,
right?
And any fans of Bern Gorman, Bern Gorman is in this.
He's doing his
I was going to mention him. If you want, there's a lot of some people are, we get fed a lot of scenery in this, including Bern Gorman. And I love Bokeem Woodbine. I've been a fan of his for like 20 years. And also, I just enjoy anything he's in. He's just a delight every time. So there's some great casting. And then I will add my favorite cameo from a sci-fi legend, Keir D'Elia.
Keir D'Elia is in this, yeah.
And I'm like, I thought he was dead.
He's not.
No, he's very much alive. And
Keir D'Elia from 2001 just shows up. You go, that guy's voice sounds... Oh! And talking to Steve Downes, I said, you know, if they called you up for a cameo, and he was like, yeah, I'd do it in a second. Not just because I'm jealous of Keir D'Elia and jealous of everybody who got to work with one of my acting heroes when he was on set.
Yeah, that was amazing. It's like, yeah, Dave Bowman, there he is. All right, we're firing off the spoiler horn now, and we're going to talk more about what happens in season one of Halo. But go watch it at Paramount Plus or wherever you can find it, because I don't know where it is. It's probably mostly on Paramount Plus in the world, but who knows?
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Here we go. So, okay, you can let your spoilers out. Now, we didn't even mention, maybe it's all for the best, we didn't even mention McKee, who is really interesting. Like, there's the moment where there's a human with a covenant and you're like, what? And then they drop her, right? And they use her as an agent, and that's interesting. But she has magic visions when she touches the magic rocks, just like John does. And so there is that moment where we're connected and they have sex, and I'm like, he plays a little older than her. That's a little creepy.
Was, that, I thought that that was like a sort of father-daughter relationship right up until that moment.
Oh, and I did not read it that way.
I could totally read it that way. And then I looked her up and she's, oh, she's 35. She did not look 35.
I think it's not just the height difference between them, but for me, part of it was the way that she was like swaddled in these costumes by the Covenant. It coded for me that they were playing her younger than I knew her to be. Cause I mean, she's in Peaky Blinders and she's been in a bunch of stuff. I knew that she was of a similar age to Pablo Schreiber, but, it just for me, I think it was a completely unintentional missable thing about the way that the show positioned her a bit, where I did get some of that kind of father-daughter vibe stuff, but part of it was, because it came off to me, like when we jumped back to younger her, doing the math, it seemed like they were actually coding her as like not much more than a teenager.
I really thought, to that similar thing, I actually thought for a little bit that they might have turned out to be siblings given the connection that they have.
And right. I was like, maybe they were both.
But they were basically both kids who were stolen.
Exactly. And I thought for a second, maybe they had come from the same family and that was going to be the reveal. And then after that scene with them, I was like, boy, I hope not. That would be really, that's like taking the Star Wars thing and going to 11, even worse.
This said, I don't have as much of an issue with it as I do a particular For All Mankind thing that I'm very much not alone in disliking. It's something that I think, it was, they're doing that. Oh, that's what this is. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't expect that.
It was a little weird, but in general, I thought that character was really interesting. I think it's a strange storyline to have it be that the chief is sort of a chosen one in terms of his sensitivity here. But then again, I can also kind of explain it away as being he is a chosen one already, right? And who's to say what Dr. Halsey, played by Natasha McElhone, who we also didn't mention before the spoiler horn, they'll have some surprises waiting for him. It'll be good. Is like, she's up to no good. So who knows what kind of thing she was looking for when she was picking the Spartans, and perhaps they are related to this weird sensitivity. But in the grand space opera thing, which, you know, the Halo story isn't that great, but what's good about it is the trappings. It's got like lots of weird sci-fi
things in it, right?
And so the fact that there is something that the Covenant and the humans don't understand that is from the past and is... It's like setting off these beacons and they're trying to follow it. And where, you know, all of us are probably sitting there going, it's the Halo. Yeah. They're like, this mystical thing called the Halo. We don't know what it is.
Have you played this game? It's a ring world.
Like, it's a ring world.
There's like eight games about it. People, come on.
And there's that moment where he has the vision and he's on the Halo. And I'm like, it was so great because it's like, oh, you guys worked so hard to get to this little clue about where you're going. And, you know, I thought that that was, again, as a sci-fi thing, I thought that was a lot of fun, that it's like this mysterious ancient thing that nobody understands yet, but we kind of know where it's going because we play the game.
Yeah, as a writer, the most fascinating thing to me, the thing that they could do with this is exactly what they did, which was go, we're going to figure out why we ended up on this Halo thing and what it is and to some extent. And this is no shade to game writers, which we know a few of those. But one of the things that is very different in game writing as opposed to, I guess you would say passive, non-active narrative structure is it's okay, we're going to have a game where a guy shoots aliens and escapes a thing. And you are building a roller coaster, not exactly something for people to necessarily feel things other than jump scare, fear, and surprise about. And that they really did the job with this. We said it before the spoiler horn, but it paid off in every single way that they went, well, here's an opportunity. Let's see what there is there. And yeah, this doesn't feel decompressed. Like they filled a whole first season with setting us on the course toward probably a whole lot more action and a lot more green screen stuff.
I mean, also, if we're speaking about chosen ones, Quan is also a chosen one because her family has some lineage of protecting some mystical well or something. And I kind of would like to have seen some of that pay off because it did feel like we got half a season to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Like, because like Quan doesn't cross paths again with the Master Chief in the, like the second half of the series. And I was expecting a lot of those threads to come back together, and they didn't. So it felt like, well, we've got the budget. We can make nine of these.
I actually wonder, because, you know, they are making a second season. I actually wonder if they got a two-season commitment.
Yeah, that was my guess.
And because of the COVID delays, they just cut their story at episode 9 and figured that was a good way to end. And they might, I don't know how many episodes they might have been committed to, but they may have, like, we'll just do 11 next time and that'll be our 20 or whatever their commitment was. Because it does sort of feel like they had some latitude to truncate and kind of move on, because it doesn't quite feel like what you would have planned to do. I mean, who knows, but... Her story especially,
There's a new showrunner for season 2 as well. It's David Weiner, who did Brave New World, which I really liked. So
I did too.
I want to say, we mentioned Mickey. I liked her. I agree. I think her story was interesting. That last couple episodes especially are kind of heartbreaking, right? Because the whole thing is sort of set up to her be like, she's going to be a mole, right? And she's got her little laser scalpel under her fingernail. And like, you're like, oh man. This is bad news, right? She's going to trick them all. And then, obviously, the whole thing is about her realizing that maybe that's not what she's here to do. She, like, pulls her fingernail out in a pretty gruesome scene, but, like, is, like, throwing away her connection, right, with the Covenant. And that's also, they do a brilliant job of having that moment where that plays out simultaneous to Miranda essentially figuring out that she's a mole. Mm-hmm. And you're like, but no, she's come around. No, it's too late. Like, and you're like, why would you believe her? Like, that is structured very well. There's a lot of good tension in that episode. I thought that was really climactic in the way that it played out. And it played out in a logical way, even though it was also at the same time being like, oh, no, you've got this all wrong. And I think that's testament.
She's also being used by the aliens as well, who talk absolutely. About, oh, we're going to kill her off as soon as this unclean abomination, whatever. Yeah.
She's a successfully converted true believer who is shown everything that one could show a true believer to change their mind. And sure enough, it just does not. She is dedicated to the cause. And you know, what James just said about the Covenant, you know, having plans for disposal of her, I guess it shows you what good it does to blindly follow a cause without actually having a personal investment or having agency in what that cause is doing.
I do wonder if we're going to see her again, because
I sure hope we do.
Yeah. Yeah, because she gets killed, but it's sort of like, but she's killed and also doing a telepathic thing. And is she, I mean, like, it's a sci-fi show. We'll see.
But
I'd like to see her again.
Depends who's available for the shooting for the next season, I guess.
Well,
but
we should talk a little bit more about Halsey, because I think another great character pulled from this. I feel like her interpretation here is actually pretty close to the game.
Yes, I would say it's the closest.
But Natasha McElhone playing a sociopath, essentially.
Yeah, Matt Scientist.
Right? Like, straight up sociopath. Like, I'm going to tell everybody exactly what they need to hear. And I have zero morality or compunctions about this, despite what I'm telling people. I mean, the scenes with her and her daughter, especially, I think of that one where she, late in the game, where she invites Miranda over and they're talking or whatever. And you're like, well, is she actually feeling remorse? I'm not sure she does. And then she turns out it was all a ploy to get, like, her biometrics. And you're like, yeah, that seems like something a sociopathic person would do. Sure. Yeah.
My understanding is originally she was supposed to also be the voice of Cortana, and they made, I think, the smartest choice they did, which was to not have her have to play opposite herself. And also just, you know, they are making so many diversions, but the presence of Jen Taylor as the mind of Halsey put through a bunch of machine learning, really, really helps sell the fact that this manufactured consciousness that used Halsey's brain as its source material, it really helps sell not just the relationship between those two characters, but Halsey as hardline as she is. It allows that contrast to be there better for me than it would if McElhone were also the voice of Cortana.
I also like her hubris in that she, you know, makes a copy of her own mind and is then surprised when she doesn't follow orders.
Yeah.
But I mean, the copy of her own mind has morality, which is for an AI, you know, that's a whole different twist in there too.
Yeah, I know, and we hadn't really mentioned the fact that, yeah, there is this kind of family thing going on in that Miranda Keyes, who is the Captain Jacob Keyes' daughter, is also Catherine's daughter. And so there's clearly a lot going on. And
she's a member of the military hierarchy that you can kind of root for, right? Like her father and mother, it turns out, conspired to kidnap children, replace them with clones who die. But that's a nice touch, right? Of just
which pays off very nicely at the end.
At the end, because she has her own clone who dies. But like, so they have both been, they're both complicit in this Spartan program that has generated these four characters that we know, but is just like unforgivable on every level. So you know, let's line them out. But Miranda is like just trying to do her best in all of this. So, like, if there's anybody that you can kind of like say, oh well. At least Miranda is trying to figure this stuff out, because everybody else is awful. And I haven't even mentioned there is the what is she, like an admiral or the admiral who is
Perrin Gosky.
The actress who plays that character, unfortunately, she's essentially there because they couldn't get Shura Egdashlu.
Yeah.
And yeah. she doesn't quite match up.
Shabana Azmi and Shura Egdashlu, like basically, you know, it was Shabana in 24 instead of Shura.
Yeah. But, I think, like, she's okay. And she's another person where you're like, cause she's the head of the intelligence service. And there's another person who you're like, yeah, no, like, no, these people are all bad.
Least Miranda is the only one who complains when they do the whatever it was, not Order 66, but you know,
we're gonna kill Quan, yes, just because she's
order,
let's kill her. Okay.
Command 67. It wasn't Order 66. It was Command 67.
I know.
It's basically the same thing.
Or whatever it was. But Shabana Azmi, one of the things that I was let down by is she's an incredible actress. Like, she is a legendary Indian new wave actress that I just don't feel like they gave her much other than to be the authority figure to tell people no.
No. She doesn't have a lot to do. And like I said, I think that somebody wrote this for Shura Egdashlu, like in their head, and like, they're not the same performers, and it doesn't really carry off. And it's tough. It's not entirely her fault. I mean, I don't love the performance, but I don't know. Everything she says is super stilted anyway. So, it is what it is, but yeah, Miranda at least feels like somebody who is, idealistic and trying to do the right thing and believes in this stuff. What I find funny is by the end of the first season, instead of being like, yeah, humanity, F yeah, we love them, go get them, Master Chief, it's like, no, those guys are terrible, run away, Master Chief.
Right? Don't
I say, what a way to go for nine episodes to take us there with Halo. It's like, I thought that was really good. And like I said, I don't know if I identify with John, but like, I know who he is. I really have a sense, and Pablo Schreiber deserves a lot of credit for this too. Like, he's a human being that I actually am rooting for in this show, which could, like I said, that's surprising because it's Master Chief, right? He could just be a cipher, and he's not, and that's great.
I mean, that's what he kind of appears to be when he first appears, when there's that first sort of battle scene where he comes in, after everybody's dead. And you know, he's got her on the ship, and he's just not reacting to her. He's basically a robot. And then,
well, and that's extremely relevant. I mean, that's the arc of the season too, right? Is the whole like developing feelings.
Developing
because
feelings.
They
rip out.
You took out.
They've got their little pellets in their spine.
And again, we mentioned up front Kai, who again I will put a vote in for as my favorite character of the series, who is basically the other Spartan that sees that John's like been taking out his, you know, robot implant and is getting feelings and is like, maybe I should try that. Maybe I should give that a whirl.
Self surgery.
I should get some hair dye.
A gun grease, really. And I just her burgeoning humanity is so charming. Like,
I love the line where they're talking about, you know, why are the Covenant attacking us? And she says, do you ever wonder why? And he goes, no. And then she says, do you ever wonder why you never wonder why? And I like that line.
I enjoyed her relationship with Miranda too.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like that there's not just one member of the squad that stays chipped, as it were, and it's both Riz and Vanek that are like, no, you're the outlaw, you know, why should we care about this or that? And then we have the extreme outlier, who is much further along than John has been in booking Woodbine Soren,
right.
Who is, you know, he's still got some of his stuff on, but he's very much outside the loop. I like that we have that diversity of perspectives of people who have been in the power armor, as it were. And the power armor, speaking of, one of my favorite things in the show is how well the power armor comes off, and the different varieties of it that we see. One of the things that is not as challenging for a cash strapped, though still expensive TV show to pull off is, you know, shiny surfaces. That said, like, they were really big on using practical suits, and like, it matters and it makes a difference. And of course, then the actors had to deal with actually navigating wearing those and wearing the boots and everything. But the Spartans never feel CG light or CG heavy. They feel like they are there.
Actual heavy. And because every time that they step, there's a giant rumble, which is actually one of the things that I loved about the sound design of this show is, yeah, like every step they take, there's an enormous rumble
because they make. And I enjoy that it's an armor that is like, they have to get in their crazy little like things to get it put on. Cause it's like, yeah, it's extremely heavy. Of course, it's not a thing that you take on and off. Like, oh, let me just pop out of my armor and pop back in. No. It's a process.
I'm Tony Stark. I'm just going to pull it out of a suitcase. Okay, guys.
And there is a good sense of scale with them because they're all supposed to be like 7 foot tall or something.
Right. Yes.
And then when they are fighting Covenant forces that are 15 feet tall, it sells the scale.
It's freaking
of
terrifying.
That.
Yeah.
Right. And I think the perspective of the rest of the UNSC. There's a scene I think it's in the first episode, and I ran it back a couple times because the captions were incorrect. But there's a part where, you know, they think essentially that the Master Chief has maybe be going rogue, and they talk about locking down the base, and the Admiral Panagoski, we just discovered, is like, oh yes, a full Soren protocol. And I was like, I had to rerun it a couple times because we hadn't been introduced to Soren yet.
Uh-huh.
And they missubtitled it as full squadron protocol or something. I was like, that's not what she's saying. But it makes sense later, right? You're like, you realize, oh, we've had them go rogue before, and we know that is bad. So we got to do everything possible to make sure that we are not losing another super soldier because that looks.
And also in that scene, you get the interesting sort of chain of command in the Halsey basically talks to the other Spartans and said, yeah, just ignore all those other orders you have. You report to me. And if anybody touches John, they're to be considered an enemy.
Which is a problem later on, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, we've referred to the UNSC, but we finally actually named them. And we're talking about stuff happening on Reach. Hey, you remember when the first game came out and there was this tie-in novel called The Fall of Reach?
Yeah.
Yes.
The Reach was still around was a surprise for me that delighted me.
I played the game Halo Reach, which is set on Reach, which is a prequel to the rest of the games. But yeah, Reach, things are not great for Reach in the game continuity. We'll see if they go that way here.
There are
too.
Quite a few things in the continuity where you're like, well, I know where this is going to go in like six games, but...
So the fact that they never get to the Halo and it's just sort of like a MacGuffin in a way... I was kind of hoping that the season would end up there, but I also appreciated sort of where it went, and I like that we saw it, and I like that, like, we know, if you know the vaguest thing about the video game, you know what the Halo is, and that it is the place that they're trying to go, right? And I thought that they did handle that pretty well. Those visions where they're out in the grass on the Halo, I thought they looked great too, actually. But I love that it's a thing that they're pursuing, even though I was a little frustrated that they didn't get there. The whole thing is sort of a narrative drive to like, can we get to the beginning of the first Halo game, essentially?
Yeah.
So I'm okay with that. I like them starting a little early because if it's just like a chief, we're dropping you down on the Halo, it's like, okay, but like, who is he and why are we here?
Why? What is the Halo? What's the deal? Yeah.
For me, the interesting thing about leaving actually getting to it until after the first season is, it kind of broadened the imagery and, you know, metaphor of the show and why it's called Halo and not Master Chief. You know, you can look at some of the Chosen One stuff and think about it as, you know, are these Chosen Ones, are they anointed? Is there some like semi-religious kind of aspect to them? Mm. And, you know, whether that was intentional or it's just headcanon that they generated for me, I prefer that to the headcanon that I would have to create in the games to go, surely this isn't, you know, this isn't all that there is to all this stuff, right?
I like that there is this, I mean, I mentioned earlier this sort of sci-fi thing of there's more that we don't understand about the universe. And the great thing about the dynamic between these deeply flawed humans with their deeply flawed government and the monstrous covenant that's just, you know, killing people left and right and will do anything they can to get to the Halo. The great thing about that is, what about the third party here, which is who made the Halo? Why does it exist? Mm-hmm. And
yep,
that is so great to have that laying out there as, you know, it's not really about either of you. Yeah, right. It's about what this thing is and what the mysteries are. And like, again, there's a whole show.
Who created the ring gates, Jason? Who created the ring gates?
Exactly. So you land on the Halo and you are the Master Chief, but like you and the soldiers land on the Halo. And then the first thing you got to do is like figure out like what's here. Is this the secret to the universe is on this Halo? But the bad news is that the aliens are here too. Like that is so compelling, taking it out of the video game context, so compelling from a, you know, mysteries of the universe thing. And I love that in sci-fi. So I love that they're laying it out there, but they are very slow in season one of laying the groundwork of there are magic rocks and, you know.
There's that wild scene too, where he goes to Soren's hangout and there's the guy. I laughed because
Soren's Cafe American.
It's the guy from, he was just in Wheel of Time too as a bad guy, and I don't know what the actor's name is, but he's the one who's like locked up in the cage and is like, oh, you're special, you know.
Yeah, and he's got the visions of like, right, it's like, I know, very they think I'm crazy, and I am, but I also can see things.
We've verged into fantasy almost at that point, which I think is kind of fascinating too, is like, well, I mean, you know, just looking at it from a different lens.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What else should we talk about this show? What have we not gotten to?
I mean, I think it looks pretty good, I think. It's I think they said 10 million an episode, which is like budget prestige TV at this point.
It felt pretty expensive to me, right? I mean,
it looked like at a couple
points the seams show a little bit. I think some of the stuff on Soren's rocks are a little potentially rough, but like that was sort of the other thing that conjured up the Expanse vibes to me, is like there's a scene in the early, I think the sci-fi seasons, where like they're putting somebody in like a pod, and I'm like, that's like a like one of those things you put on top of your car, like very clearly.
Oh, yeah.
It's just been slightly set dressed. It's like there are a couple points where it verges a little bit into that, but I agree mostly it looks pretty great. So I'm willing to give them a pass on like, you know, today we didn't have the money for that.
Yeah, some of the vehicle stuff too, just like
it's like SUVs. Too, yeah. Which made me laugh.
It's just, it's Jeeps. Well, I mean, what is the Warthog, but kind of a,
like,
I mean,
this,
it's a Jeep.
This production was about the midpoint between, I believe Jason's trademark phrase is mid-budget Canadian sci-fi.
Yeah.
And shot in Ireland, fantasy sci-fi.
Yeah. Do enjoy the, if you want to Google and enjoy the Chevy Tahoe that appears in the resistance camp in the first episode.
Yeah.
That still makes me laugh every single time. Why is there a Chevy Tahoe? Okay, somebody had to put it on a spaceship and
spaceship,
take it to this other planet. Like I kept thinking,
why
about
are their cars in Hawaii, Dan? How did they get there?
I guess, sure, but it's not like hundreds of years from now or whatever.
Yeah, but they can't afford to build car plant on the poor little planet that is barely surviving.
Maybe,
but it's full of whatever, some magic
explosive useful fuel.
Some magic fuel mineral, yeah.
As adult leaning sci-fi goes, I like that it goes semi-adult in that people have sex and it's acknowledged and you see a couple people's butts. But it isn't like the Klingon sex scene from Discovery season one or whatever it was, where it's just like, hey, we're on streaming. Let's do this.
I blocked that out. Or from the first episode of Expanse, the zero G sex scene.
Oh, yeah.
Zero G sex. Yeah.
Sure.
Which was a requirement, as we know, at the Sci-Fi Network at the time.
Even the first episode of Stargate has boobs in it. Like, nobody knows what they're doing when they're on cable. They're like, can we do this? And then they're like, nah, maybe we shouldn't do this. And
make sure that you put some boobs in it just to be safe.
I mean, I think
safety boobs.
You talk about adult. I think that one of the things that strikes me about Halo is that if you're coming into it thinking that it's going to be kind of like a juvenile teenage boy testosterone fest for video game fans, it's not. There's stuff, there's stuff, but like it is, I mean, throughout while I was watching it, I thought like, this is my jam, right? Like this is a widescreen sci-fi space opera kind of epic, and it's got the military aspect, but it's not just that. It's got this whole social sub text that's going on. It's got it's more Star Wars like than it is like what you might expect coming out of a video game thing. It's got layers is what I'm saying. It's got a lot of levels.
We started out on a very sandy planet. I went, oh, Tatooine syndrome again. And then we saw vegetation and I went, oh, okay.
But that scene where they're like climbing over the rocks, also looking for the ship when they find the ruins. I was also like, oh, it's like, this reminds me of like Kirk fighting the Gorn.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
There's a lot
Vasquez
of
rocks.
There's a lot of those vibes in it. And again, I hope people give it a chance who have access to it, because I was very happy. I watched episode one. I took a flyer on it. I was traveling and I just watched it before I went to bed. And when I came home, I said to Lauren, we should watch Halo because I think you're going to like it. It's really good. And we really liked it. Like it was an immediate watch when it dropped on Paramount Plus. It was so I can't give it a higher endorsement than that. You know, is it prestige TV? I don't know, but it's got some of the trappings, but it's just like, it is more than your mid-budget Canadian sci-fi show. It's a little bit higher budget and shot in like Hungary, Poland, somewhere like that.
Czech Republic,
Shot in Eastern Europe, not Canada. So, you know, a little veneer of whatever
IMDb
that
is lying to you. They didn't shoot all of this in Ontario. This was mostly shot in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, we mentioned The Mandalorian earlier, and one of the ways that I favorably compare it to that is if you like The Mandalorian, it gets into a lot of the same kinds of themes, and there is some Star Wars-y stuff in here without, to me, some of the franchise pitfalls. And it, being a franchise itself, it's, you know, a weird kind of Ouroboros of intellectual property eating itself. But, I've told a couple of friends, I'm like, if you like The Mandalorian and you want a big canvas space opera kind of a thing, this feels like a broader canvas than still to this day, the way that a lot of Star Wars stuff makes the galaxy feel real small.
And they do it without making it feel like it's this is just a Star Wars knockoff, right? Like, 100%, or a Star Trek
totally
knockoff
agree.
Or something, right? This, it very much feels like its own thing. Sure, there are trappings that feel kind of tropish, you know, super soldiers in power armor and whatever, but it doesn't really, I think, it goes beyond just those tropes.
Yeah.
I think it actually fleshes it out a lot and it feels like its own thing. And I think that's a testament, again, to the writing staff and the production and all that. Like, I mean, Halo, obviously an established world with a franchise behind it, but, you know, there's room for more stuff happening here.
It's Mandalorian-ish with a less centralized plot surrounding just the lead character. Yeah, he's the main focus of stuff, but there is a bigger supporting cast that they have long-term plans for.
But also, as we say, if you'd like Star Wars, we've got three chosen ones here. So,
take your pick. Pick one.
I think my favorite stuff in it, I think, is we've got the interaction with Cortana and Master Chief, and she's kind of just sassy talk back, and I really like that interaction. But I think it's the between all the different Spartans, and I really like Kai that scene when she's weightlifting and she's like, just like, give me something more, give me something heavier. And you see the sort of succession of lifting up warthogs or whatever. But then that goes into the kind of fight scene between all the Spartans at the end. Yeah. And I think that was really effective. Like when she's chained to that bench and she kind of like is just kicks her way out of it.
That whole sequence with the fight scene between the Spartans is something that could have felt, you know, fan service-ish to the point of just like, oh, we want to smash our action figures together, but actually totally tracks. Like all of that makes sense. It plays out really well. And it is genuinely, I don't want to quite say heartwarming, but like you're rooting for these people. You're at a point where you're like, oh my God, I hope she gets out and she can save him.
And Kai, I thought she died like twice in this show.
Yep.
And especially at that end one where she's kind of like leaps away onto Halsey's ship. And,
yeah, I want to see that was the thing I was afraid of, was it like, oh no, is she just going to go psychotic actually? Is that going to be like, she's going to be go crazy from digging out her implant? And I was like, oh, that would be disappointing. She didn't.
She did smush the helper guy, but he deserved it.
Oh, that guy was creepy. Super crazy.
He was the worst.
I mean, his kind of like the way he was with the dead clone.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it was just the accent, though.
No.
just the Scottish accent? You don't think that just makes...
He was not Scottish. I think he was Northern Irish, but anyway.
Okay, sorry. Northern Irish? Okay.
I know we all sound the same. But yeah, that whole end sequence worked really well for me.
What about the choice? And again, here, I wonder if there's some COVID rejiggering that happened, because they did shut down and then restart the show. So this was a long time gestating. That I find it strange that we get introduced to Quan and we think that it's going to be kind of a John is doing his thing, Quan's doing her thing. They meet up, he saves her, they go off, he like gives her to Bokeem Woodbine to stay safe, and they leave, and then they have their own adventures, right? But then instead what we get is episode 7, where the Master Chief's not in it, and it's all just kind of Quan going around. She goes back to her planet, the desert planet. I think this is where she gets like she gets handcuffed to a bike at one point, and out in the desert, and like all of this stuff is going on.
A lot of people get handcuffed to a lot of things in this show.
It's true. So I thought that was weird, just because it was entirely that her episode. And although I don't mind that, I just thought that would be happening in parallel. And instead, it's like they took all the Quan stuff and like, all right, here it is, episode 7. This is for you. And I don't know quite what. I like their confidence in saying we're going to do a whole episode without the Master Chief, but
we got a sort of Spirit Master Chief in that episode.
That's right. He does appear as a, not a hallucination, but a avatar. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's like he's basically
not him. It's not him.
I like that. I thought it was actually an interesting way to go from, we had an episode where I think the previous one she wasn't in the episode at all. We got none of her story, and then the next one we got all of her story. So I didn't mind that at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's the, like, you start sort of interlocking and then they're bouncing back and forth, and as their paths diverge, you know, then they separate out into these separate episodes. I think that structure actually works nicely. It did reminisce, it did make me think of a bit of the Book of Boba Fett, as I think somebody else mentioned already, the whole scene with like, oh, we're out in the desert and you're going to talk to some people who live here and they're going to put you on a heck of a trip. Have a good time.
But then, like, we don't really hear from her again, I think, after that point. And I was hoping that we would get something in the final episode.
Right.
But they had so much to do, I think, with all the...
It felt very... we'll pick back up with her later. Like, I'm sure that the show is not done with her unless...
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, like, this was her first big job, so I think they probably have her on hold through season 2 at least. So I don't see her going anywhere. We mentioned the violence earlier, and like it not feeling like a testosterone fueled whatever. One of the things that I respect the most about the way that they portray the violence is that it's gruesome. War is literal hell out in the planets beyond Earth. And I think that there is a version of it that can be excessive and be gratuitous and celebrating of it. But for me, the way that they handle it is still relatively unique among shows that deal with this kind of violence in them.
I was going to say, one of the things that I found interesting, but I know why they, I can imagine why they did it, is like, so we had part of the backstory that John actually killed Quan's mother.
Right.
And we never see the Spartans killing humans, which they've clearly been doing for like however many years, because they are this big, you know, bogeyman nightmare to the rebels. But we don't see any of that. So like, we don't see John being a bad guy before he gets to be a good guy.
And I think like part of that is, I think I got their rationale for doing that, in that they've got to make us not hate John, Riz, Vanek, and Kai, if there is a lot of stuff like that for them to show us. But the other part of it is, maybe there's a fair amount of that that is actually exaggerated or misunderstood, or maybe the fact that I'm even questioning it is part of the part of what they wanted, was for us to go, do you believe that these people did those terrible things? We'll show you later. we'll get there.
The end of this season is, obviously there's a showdown on a planet where they've got the magic rocks, and Key gets impaled, and the big moment though is that John basically says, Cortana, you need to take control, which has been this threat all along. Like, his entire personality could be wiped if Cortana takes over his body. But he says, you know, you've got to do this. And so she does, and sort of saves the day. And the last scene is sort of like silent Master Chief. Like, it's actually Cortana and not John back there. Interesting cliffhanger. I suspect that the Master Chief is not gone forever, because that would be a really weird choice to make. But what do all you think about where the show goes from here? Because they are making a second season. I think they're going to start shooting it later this year. So it'll be a while before we see it. Where do you think, I mean, other than the Halo, yeah, but like, looking at what the choices they made in season one, what are you thinking about for season two?
Well, I can imagine, especially if they're going to keep McKee on in some form, either like she is trapped in some Halo spirit world or something. I can imagine that we will see John there as well. You know, if his personality's off roaming the universe while Cortana's driving, you know, I could see some interaction between those two to come. But yeah, he's absolutely got to come back, because... unless, and I thought they might do that, that Master Chief would start speaking like Cortana, and it would be quite funny. But
I don't think that's the tone they're going for.
But that wasn't what they were going for. But it
body swap episode.
Yep.
I think the sort of the cool thing from the games is the interaction between Master Chief and Cortana. So
they've got to bring. I would watch Master Thief.
Are we going to the Halo next season?
I think so. I mean, yes. I would be disappointed if we didn't end up there, since it has now been teased so much.
They built the Halos.
They built the Halos, Jason.
Yeah, to have that conflict move off of, like, kind of, I mean, what is, if anything, been like sort of a proxy war, right? Like the Covenant and the human, the UNSC, they want these artifacts, and they're sort of fighting back and forth on that. But it seems like, now we're moving into, well, we've located the Halo, and let's figure out, like, let's start fighting over that instead. But like, I'm starting to unravel that mystery, which I think is going to have some tie-ins to where Quan is, you know, what her purpose is on Madrigal. Like, all of that, I think, is going to sort of tie together. So I certainly hope that's where we're going. And I hope, I'm actually really curious. My sort of number one thing is, like, I really want the other two Spartans to get de-chipped and get a little more chance to show some personality in season two, because I think that could be a much more fun dynamic.
It'll be more interesting than Halo 5, at the very least.
I've heard that game is pretty bad. I've never.
I played it. I honestly didn't mind it. I know people. It wasn't that bad story, but it, you know.
It was, what are we going to do with him now? Back to the show. Sorry. I kind of hope they don't unring the bell of this different John. I would be fine with the John that we saw in season one. He's gone. Master Chief is what's left.
Hmm.
And if we see Pablo Schreiber's face and we have more of an emotional self that is internal, there are a variety of ways to do that. But I think one of the things that I would hope for the future of the show is that they stick to big consequences. And this isn't me going, oh, you know, he should have been, you know, this sort of monotone, semi-robotic, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, we got 7 years of Commander Data. We can do robotic, but interesting robotic with departures from that.
Or struggling to reclaim his humanity, right? As if he's sort of recovering from this traumatic, you know, brain event, essentially.
I could see that we get an episode, maybe two of that, but I don't think it's going to last. They're going to find his Catra somewhere, stick it back
in. I see.
He'll be fine.
Reference acknowledged.
It's like, you know, there are five seasons of the original Sailor Moon anime, and spoiler, at the end of the first one, they all die, but then they're all brought back to life without their memories. And it takes a few episodes for them to all get all of their memories back and be exactly who they were previously.
Mm-hmm. I've seen The Good Place.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in that Star Trek episode, Uhura's brain gets completely wiped. And by the end of the episode, she's already reading at a high school level or something like that. It's like, yeah, sure. That's how that works.
Gotta reset that clock.
Yeah. All right. Well, wherever you can find this in the world, I encourage you to watch Halo, the series, because it's good. And I don't think we expected that would be the case, but here we are. I don't know. Speak up if you thought that this was definitely going to be great, but I was pleasantly surprised by it. And I'm looking forward to the second season. It was a great ride and some cool characters. And they made the Master Chief like an interesting guy. I like that. That was not easy to do.
Well, to quote everybody's favorite Star Trek movie, the human adventure is just beginning. Mm. And that's the story of this show.
I hope we don't have to wait another 2 years or whatever of production delays. Because as far as I know, they haven't started filming.
No, I think they're filming later this year. Yeah.
Yeah. So it will be a while.
It will be a while. All right, well, maybe we'll be back in the far future when that second season drops. But until then, let me thank my panelists for discussing Halo Season 1 with me. Dan Morin, thank you.
Thank you, Jason. I can't wait to go to another space ring.
Okay, Moises Chuyan, thank you.
Wake me when you need me.
And James Thompson, thank you.
When the podcast is over, the host and the guests go back into the same box.
And we're about to do that. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening to The Incomparable. We will see you next time.